It was the annual meeting of the Red Hat Society in Las Vegas, and I was a guest speaker. The age of the conference attendees ranged from 50-ish to 80, and my topic was managing menopause. Despite the less than exciting title of my talk, I was expecting a full house. These are my people. But nope. As droves of women walked past my room and headed to the seminar next door on flower arranging, the comment I kept hearing again and again was, "No need to attend that lecture. I'm done with menopause." But if they had attended my lecture, they would know that a woman is not done with menopause until she dies. I'm Dr. Lauren Stryker, gynecologist, best-selling author, and a nationally recognized menopause expert. When it comes to menopause, midlife, and what comes after, I'm betting you've not gotten a lot of information from your own doctor. If women are given good information, they'll make good choices. And I'm here to give you the inside information. I was kind of hurt that all those women were marching past my door, but I wasn't really surprised. The idea that menopause only lasts for a few years is a common misconception. I even Googled, when does menopause end? And credible medical sites stated that menopause ends when you're no longer having disruptive symptoms. And more likely than not, you've even been told by a misinformed medical professional that when you're no longer having hot flashes, you're done. Done with menopause. But menopause means you're no longer producing estrogen. And even though those red-headed ladies may have been done with hot flashes, brain fog, and insomnia, unless their ovaries magically began producing estrogen again, they weren't done with menopause. There are hormone receptors throughout the body, and there are lifelong consequences of being without estrogen, even if perimenopausal and early postmenopause symptoms are in the rearview mirror. This is a really important topic since so many of the consequences of long-term estrogen deprivation are silent until you run into trouble years later. So in this episode, I'm going to give you an overview of the potential long-term effects of menopause on musculoskeletal health, brain health, cardiovascular health, and of course, all the stuff that happens to your bladder, vulva, and vagina. Before I get into the specifics, I want to emphasize that not everyone has these issues. There are plenty of women that have never taken hormone therapy, are decades into menopause, and have healthy bones, no cardiovascular problems, and live well into their 90s. So how is it that some women escape the consequences of no longer making estrogen and other women don't? Well, for starters, we don't really know. But also, when you consider long-term medical issues, there are so many factors beyond hormones that impact health and longevity. Clearly, there's genetic factors, and lifestyle and diet count for a lot. It doesn't matter if you take a bucket full of estrogen every day, if you're really overweight, eat nothing but processed foods, and never exercise. Aging has an impact as well, regardless of hormone status. But then there's the hot flash factor. There's an abundance of data that shows a high correlation with women that have hot flashes and long-term medical problems. Way back in season one, and I mean way back, we're talking episode two, "Think Your Hot Flashes Can't Kill You, Think Again," I get into the details of exactly why that happens. But the short story is that women who have hot flashes are far more likely to have cardiovascular disease, metabolic syndrome, diabetes, osteoporosis, and breast cancer than women who don't have hot flashes. But aging, hot flashes, genetics, and lifestyle aside, postmenopause women, just as a direct consequence of no longer producing estrogen, are at increased risk for many long-term health issues. So, starting with bone health. It's well established that a genetic predisposition, smoking, excessive alcohol intake, inactivity, and many medications impact bone health. But men drink, men smoke, men sit around doing nothing, yet women are almost five times as likely as a guy to have osteoporosis. This disparity is a direct consequence of estrogen deprivation. The reason that estrogen matters is because estrogen prevents bone resorption. This bone loss secondary to loss of estrogen starts just before or during perimenopause, so earlier than you think. In the few years just prior to perimenopause, as estrogen levels start to fluctuate and decline, there's an average yearly bone loss of about 2%. With the onset of peri and early postmenopause, that accelerates, and there's an average bone loss of 10 to 12%. After that, things do slow down to about 0.5% a year, but it continues, and over time, it adds up. By the time a woman's 80 years old, she's lost on average approximately 30% of her peak bone mass. The result of all of this is either low bone mass, also known as osteopenia, or osteoporosis. Osteoporosis is when the bone has become so fragile that there's a significant increased risk of fracture. But think about this. Most women start to lose bone in their 40s and early 50s, resulting in osteopenia. Osteopenia has no symptoms, and since a screening bone density isn't recommended and not covered by insurance in most cases until someone hits 65, most women have no clue that they're on the road to osteoporosis or have osteoporosis already. According to the CDC, in adults aged 50 years and over, 12.6% had osteoporosis of the hip, spine, or both. And among women, the prevalence was 19.6% compared with 4.4% of males. By age 80, 35% of American women have osteoporosis. So in the United States alone, there's currently 8 million women with osteoporosis who are at risk of fracture. And most of the 2 million hip or vertebral fractures related to osteoporosis that occur every year in the United States occur in postmenopausal women. But because they're not screened for osteoporosis until age 65, most don't know it at the point when they can actually do something to prevent it from happening. And as anyone knows who's either personally experienced an osteoporotic fracture or had someone close to them with a fracture, the consequences can be devastating. Vertebral fractures are associated with chronic pain, height loss, and can impact the ability to walk and function in daily activities. Ditto hip fracture. And almost 25% of women over age 50 with an osteoporotic hip fracture die in the following year as a result of complications. So osteoporosis is not just about getting shorter. And it's not controversial that estrogen therapy prevents the progression of osteopenia to osteoporosis in at least 50% of cases. But even women who are taking estrogen are told there's no need if they're no longer having hot flashes. No need, even though the benefit of taking estrogen on bone is lost as soon as it's stopped. So are women who continue to lose bone after their hot flashes have gone away and they're no longer taking estrogen done with menopause? No, not by a long shot. Changes to the musculoskeletal system are not limited to bone health. In the ongoing study of women across America, also known as the SWAN study, muscle stiffness and generalized joint and muscle pain affected 54% of U.S. women between the ages of 40 and 55. A few weeks ago, my guest was orthopedic surgeon Dr. Vonda Wright, and we talked about the impact of hormone deprivation on muscles and joints, a condition she coined musculoskeletal syndrome of menopause. According to her research, postmenopause women are far more prone to arthritis and orthopedic problems such as frozen shoulder. But the concept that joint problems and overall aches and pains are related to menopause as opposed to age, it's still not universally accepted. But there was this recent study that looked at over 600 women under the age of 45 who went into a premature menopause as a result of surgical removal of their ovaries. So these are young women who stopped producing both estrogen and testosterone at an unusually young age. And those young women with premature surgical menopause, well, they developed musculoskeletal discomfort and muscle wasting the same as women who entered menopause at an older, more typical age. So this study really establishes that it is estrogen and likely also testosterone deprivation, not aging and not chronological age, which causes postmenopausal changes in the musculoskeletal system. And the consequences of this go beyond pain and stiffness. Specifically, immobility and muscle wasting over time result in frailty. Women with frailty are twice as likely to end up in a nursing home. In a 2022 study of 7,823 women, the prevalence of frailty in women who were treated with hormone therapy was approximately half the rate of frailty in women who never received hormone therapy. So again, establishing that these changes are a consequence of long-term loss of estrogen. Are women who have muscle, joint pain, and frailty done with menopause when they no longer have hot flashes? Definitely not. Moving on to how your heart fares without hormones. Estrogen receptors are throughout the cardiovascular system. It's not controversial that a lack of estrogen results in a significant increase in atherosclerosis, heart failure, and stroke, due not only to inflammatory changes, but also a reduced ability for blood vessels to dilate, resulting in overall vascular dysfunction. The earlier the menopause, the greater the risk. Your heart's not happy when there's no estrogen around. The risk of heart failure, coronary artery disease, and stroke are all higher in women than men. Do those cardiovascular changes disappear once your half lashes disappear? No, definitely not. And then there's diabetes. Diabetics are insulin resistant, meaning that the body doesn't respond normally to insulin, and glucose can build up in the blood. A lack of estrogen increases insulin resistance, which is why postmenopause women have a greater risk of developing both metabolic syndrome and type 2 diabetes than premenopause women. Diabetes, in turn, increases the risk of heart disease, stroke, and many other serious conditions, including kidney disease and nerve disease. And while I'm on the topic, diabetic women also have a much higher rate of sexual dysfunction and difficulty with orgasm due to vascular and neurologic changes in the clitoris. Insulin resistance postmenopause is an issue long after hot flashes are gone. The science that's really hot right now, though, is the impact of menopause on the brain. The brain is loaded with estrogen receptors. When estrogen drops, the brain kind of panics, which is why so many perimenopausal and early postmenopause women experience brain fog, mood changes, temperature regulation problems, and insomnia. These symptoms are generally temporary since the brain eventually figures it out and accommodates to life without estrogen. But estrogen has a long-term impact on neuroprotection, brain cell growth, and brain plasticity, meaning the ability to adapt to change. And if you need some objective proof, MRIs of brains of postmenopause women are smaller than seen in premenopause women or men of the same age. And by the way, those changes are not seen in women on estrogen therapy, proving that the change in brain matter volume is an estrogen issue. In addition, women are twice as likely as men to develop Alzheimer's disease and other forms of dementia. And there's a great deal of emerging evidence that estrogen started within 10 years of the menopause transition is brain protective. If you need further convincing that your brain is never done with menopause, check out Dr. Lisa Mascani's book, The Menopause Brain. Moving south. Genitourinary syndrome of menopause, meaning the physical changes and symptoms that occur in the vulva, vagina, and urinary tract postmenopause, doesn't go away. I'm talking that searing pain with intercourse, vulvar burning, itching, irritation, and bladder symptoms like recurrent urinary tract infections, urgency, and frequency. These symptoms, which as a group are referred to as genitourinary syndrome of menopause, are a direct result of estrogen-starved tissues. It's called genitourinary syndrome of menopause, not genitourinary syndrome of aging. At least 70% of women have genitourinary syndrome of menopause, and unlike the brain, your genital tissues never get used to the loss of estrogen, and if untreated, it only gets worse with time. Problems with sexual function postmenopause go beyond painful sex. Libido, arousal, and the ability to orgasm are also impacted by hormonal changes. So is the woman who hasn't had a hot flash in years, but also hasn't been able to have sex in years, done with menopause? I don't think so. The point of all this is not that every woman needs to use hormone therapy. The point is that the impact of estrogen deprivation is lifelong, and that women are never done with menopause until they die. And even without using estrogen, there are things you can do to protect your bone, brain, bladder, and blood vessels, and other things that don't start with a B. But here's what I want you to know. Even if you have no symptoms, get screened for bone health, heart health, and diabetes. Even if you feel fine, get that annual checkup. And if you are having hot flashes, stop dressing in layers and do something to get rid of them. And there are plenty of non-hormonal options. And big picture, all the stuff you're always hearing about, a healthy diet and keeping your mind and body active, it actually makes a difference. Genetic only accounts for 20 to 30% of longevity. So even if you have a terrible family history, all is not lost. It's not all about estrogen. It's a big factor. But even if you don't take estrogen, all is not lost. We've actually learned a lot about longevity from the so-called blue zones, areas of the world where it's not unusual for people to live to like 100. And it's not that the air is different. What researchers have found is that people that live in these areas have a very specific lifestyle with 9 basic principles, starting with 1, making movement a natural part of your day. Not necessarily exercising, which is, of course, good for you, but just consistently moving, taking stairs, walking, cycling. When you watch the Netflix series on the Blue Zones, in every segment, you see folks in their 80s and 90s trudging up hills to visit their neighbors, gardening and cycling. Not an Uber in sight. Number two, you need to have a sense of purpose beyond thinking about what you're going to have for dinner. You don't have to have a job, but you do have to have a reason to get up in the morning. Number three, prioritizing stress relief. I know, easier said than done, but really important. Number four is portion control. It's not just what people eat, it's how much they eat. And in general, Americans simply eat too much food. In many of the blue zones, the mantra is eat until you're about 80% full, which in many cases just means put a little bit less on your plate and slow down. Number five, still on the topic of food, processed foods, they don't exist in blue zones. Most people stick to largely plant-based diets. Number six is, yeah, go easy on the alcohol. Number seven is about family. And when we talk about family, it's not necessarily a biological family. It can be just a very close group of people that you are consistently with. But it's important to have a core group that you feel close to. Number eight, hanging out with other people that have healthy behaviors. I don't know about you, but if I'm with someone who's eating grilled veggies and fish, I'm far less likely to go for the French fries. Now, number seven and eight about being with other people and who you hang out with really connects to number nine, which is the big one, connecting with other people. We have become such an isolated society, even more so post-COVID. People are lonely. Increasing numbers of people rarely connect, even superficially, with other people. And studies consistently show that a lack of human interaction has an enormous impact on longevity. And if you don't have a built-in community or just would like a new group of people to hang out with, that's where volunteering, joining a group like the Red Hat Society, Silver Sneakers, or one of the many ARP social groups can really make a difference. After my dad died, my mom felt like she no longer belonged in her very coupled social circle and signed up for adult classes at the University of Chicago. That was her community for the next 20 years of her life. Those were the people that surrounded her when she became ill. It's never too late to find new friends, to make a new community. And hopefully those new friends will like to eat unprocessed food and walk a lot. Even chatting with the checkout person at the grocery store counts. It's also worth noting that, as far as I know, the women in the blue zones were not slapping an estrogen patch on their belly. It's about more than hormones. Having said that, the science supports that hormone therapy will not only improve quality of life, but will also impact on length of life, particularly in a society in which people don't move a lot and don't eat particularly well. So if you are currently on hormone therapy, despite what you've been told, in general, there's no reason to stop and there are benefits to continuing. In a recent study of over 10 million women who remained on their hormone therapy past the age of 60, there was a significant reduction in cardiovascular disease and fracture risk, along with a decrease in breast and uterine cancer. If you're within 10 years of your menopause transition, you're still in that critical window when there are maximum benefits to starting hormone therapy, meaning it's not too late to prevent the cardiovascular issues, bone issues, and other long-term problems. And then there's the big group. If you're over 60 and either went off hormone therapy a long time ago or never started, and you're interested in starting hormone therapy, it's not out of the question. Did a podcast just a couple of weeks ago with Dr. Simon when we had a detailed discussion about starting hormone therapy over the age of 60, how to know if it's going to benefit you, how to go about it, how to talk to your doctor about it. And again, if hormone therapy is not an option or not desired, there are so many non-hormonal options for hot flash relief and bone health. I want to emphasize that local hormone therapy to treat vulvar, vaginal, and bladder symptoms can be started any time. And unlike some of the other changes that occur post-menopause, are almost always completely reversible, no matter how old you are. I have treated women who are in their 80s and in their 90s with severe dryness, severe vulvar symptoms that reverse them completely by starting a local vaginal estrogen or DHEA. So there you have it. The average age of menopause in the United States is currently 51 to 52. With a life expectancy well into the 80s, most women will spend 30 or more years in menopause, which for most women is at least 20 years after they are done with hot flashes. And if there are any Red Hat Society ladies listening, now that you know you are not done with menopause, invite me back again. I still have my big red hat that I bought at the last convention. I'm Dr. Lauren Stryker, and thank you for joining me. You will find lots more information in my Insight Information books available on Amazon.com. and follow Francie as she navigates her way through vaginal dryness, hot flashes, and pretty much every menopausal symptom you can think of.
I feel blue. She helped me see the light.